What I'm going to do this channel is interview people who have totally different opinions from my own. And to stick to that commitment, I'm today interviewing here in Holland Park, Peter Hitchens. Now, Peter Hitchens, in lots of ways, is a kind of standard bearer for the socially conservative right in this country. He writes for the Mail on Sunday. Do we have any common ground? I suspect he will surprise you with some of his beliefs and ideas. I'm very optimistic. Kind of hope drives what I believe in.
This you sense, poor thing.
Well, this is what I want to talk to you about, you see, because I think despite...
What a miserable life you must
despite,
be.
Well, we'll see, you know, I'll have a life of disappointment, I'm sure. But a lot of the stuff you write about, you've got the passion for your beliefs, but you seem completely defeatist. You don't think...
No, I relax. I realise that in the evening of my days, which I've now pretty much reached, I realise that... I realise that most of these struggles are futile, that they aren't, even where they succeed, and I hope to some extent that your utopia doesn't come about, because you will hate it when it arrives.
Not a utopia.
Okay, well, a mild utopia, I guess it's a semi-utopia. Whatever it is, I hope that your ideals aren't fulfilled, because you will be the person most disappointed in them.
In what way? What do you mean?
Well, because it will not work out the way you thought it would. It's absolutely true that it's better to travel, hopefully, than to arrive.
Jeremy Corbyn is obviously standing to be leader of the Labour Party. He's unexpectedly gone from, I don't know, 200-1 to being the front runner.
This is very funny, isn't it?
What's happened?
It's an awful lot of people sick of being told what to do, and I also think it's because of the observable fact that the Blairite project, originated in the kitchens and pantries of Eurocommunism, has now been taken over by the Conservative Party. And therefore has no need of the Labour Party to continue it. The Labour Party has been freed of its need to be Blairite anymore.
So it's left a vacuum.
So it's in some ways it's a sort of spasm of, all right then, we're free at last, we can do this. As all the Blairite media and the David Milibands and the Peter Mandelsons come crowding in to say, don't do this, the impulse to say, well, if he says, don't do it, that's absolutely what I must do, just grows stronger and stronger, doesn't it?
They become the
campaign
managers.
It's a very good demonstration that we still have a strong national sense of humour.
You used to be a Trotskyist for a while.
I certainly was, yeah.
You were in the International Socialist, which, for people who don't know, is the forerunner of the Socialist Workers' Party. Yeah. And this was more than a flirtation, you were a true believer for a while.
Oh, very much so, yeah. I thought that Marxism-Leninism had pretty much the answer to the problems of the world, yeah.
How do you look back at that now, given where you
well,
stand?
Well, it was a reasonable mistake to have made. Unlike people who've been vaccinated against a disease, I've actually had the disease, and therefore I'm totally immune from it in a way that a mere vaccination couldn't possibly provide.
People, again, you call yourself a moral and social conservative, yeah, and unapologetically so, but you're not a Tory. In fact, you're very hostile to the modern Tories.
Yeah.
Why?
Because it calls itself the Conservative Party. If it called itself the Socialist Workers' Party, I wouldn't have anything against it.
It's not a left-wing party.
It's a left-wing party. It's egalitarian. It's got much more in common with the SWP than it has with Conservatives.
Do you think the...
I often hear David Cameron and George Osborne coming out with things which I used to say when I was a Trot.
Well, let's think about
this. The difference is that I knew when I said them that they were Trotskyist things to say. They have no idea. They are left-wing, but they don't know they're left-wing.
But do you think...
Which is even more alarming in some ways. At least Jeremy Corbyn knows he's left-wing.
You've called for the breakup of the Conservative Party before. Do you stand
well,
by
it? I hope that it would break up. I simply underestimated the enormous power of lies and money, which enabled the Conservative Party to obtain a victory in the elections. There was no national trend. What there was a fantastically clever, well-targeted, very costly campaign by the Conservatives in targeted constituencies, which won them a technical victory on points, which they didn't. It wasn't a moral victory. Nobody really won that election morally, but it was quite sufficient for them to form a majority government, and it was more effective than they thought it would be.
How would you sum up David Cameron and what he stands for?
I don't think he stands for anything. I think he stands for obtaining office for the sons of gentlemen. He's jolly good at it. He's quite likable. I can't feel any passion against him. It's impossible. I feel passion against a blancmange. He's a perfectly nice chap, I'm sure, but he has absolutely no interest in changing anything. He has a great deal of interest in maintaining things as they are and in being in office while they're maintained.
So a lot of people don't realise you support, for example, you'd prefer public ownership of the railways, for example.
Immediately, yeah. The intervention of the state in a lot of areas is essential. You can manage without it. Even the most, I mean, there are wild conservative, well, liberal free marketeers who say that you don't need a navy, it could be done by sort of privateers. But it's obviously ridiculous. Every state has to intervene in something. And once you've decided you must intervene by creating a navy, then you've pretty much sold the principle, haven't you? The state's obviously useful sometimes.
You used to be a non-believer.
Yes.
Now you're Christian. Your religious convictions, do you see that as very much the underlying kind of basis of your political
position? I think it has to be the basis of any position. I'm troubled by anybody who doesn't have a religious opinion of any kind. A set of opinions without a religious underpinning would be like a house without foundation.
With your brother, obviously, you two are both huge figures in your own right. And growing up, what was your relationship?
Oh, adversarial. We were not close enough to be, we weren't twins or anything like that, to be the good friends that siblings sometimes can be. We weren't far enough apart to be wholly independent of each other, so we were fighting for the same territory a lot of the time.
Did anyone bully anyone? Or was it wasn't like that?
I don't know whether the word bullying these days has so many applications. He was bigger than I was, but I like to think I could hit quite hard.
Sure you did.
But he was very good at pretending that I hadn't hurt him.
I mean, after he died, how did you fit in terms of his followers, I suppose? Do you make a distinction between those, the way he's been portrayed and the brother you actually...
Oh, the fanboys are impossible. They have absolutely no idea what kind of person he was. I only realised it when I went and did that dreadful debate with him at Grand Rapids, Michigan. They didn't hate me because of anything personal. They hated me because they'd come to see Christopher and they couldn't work out what I was doing there. It was like going to see the big movie and finding you had to sit through a B picture for half an hour first. As it dawned on me what was actually going on, that Christopher had become a rock star, I could see why it was my presence was completely superfluous.
It must have felt surreal to you to be in a situation like that. You're with your brother and you're there surrounded by his fan base who are very hostile to you.
Well, they became more hostile to me as the more they knew who I was and what I thought, the more hostile they became. To begin with, it was just, what is this guy doing here? As the evening went on, it was, what is this guy doing here? And we hate him.
I mean, it comes across sometimes. You see yourself as you're surrounded in this kind of socially liberal mix,
and
you're this kind of lone voice trying to speak out against.
I don't know about alone, but there aren't that many of us.
Well, the Conservative government, they've introduced a tax break for married couples. That's the sort of moral and social...
It's a token. What actually needs to be done for marriage is to reprivilege it in far greater ways. The real blow struck at marriage was struck in all major Western societies in the 1960s by the introduction of what was, in effect, no-fault divorce. There is absolutely no suggestion, there has been none since the 1960s, in any major political party, that the introduction of that form of divorce was a mistake.
Do you think the fact a woman and a woman or a man and a man can marry has any impact on your...
No, marriage? I think it's a side effect of it. I think it's a consequence of the collapse of heterosexual marriage. And I regret now getting involved in the argument about same-sex marriage because it was a Stalingrad, a diversion. Why is one worrying about a few thousand people who want to have same-sex marriages while not being concerned at all about the collapse of heterosexual marriage, which involves millions of people and millions of children?
I mean, it used to be more acceptable to be publicly prejudiced about gay people, about women, about people who aren't white. Isn't it a good thing that it's now less acceptable?
Yeah, unequivocally a good thing, yeah.
Because you talk about political correctness, isn't that all that
I
really
talk about
is?
Political correctness, and I am ambivalent about political correctness. I always make the point, say the reason why it has been such an effective weapon is that it's based most fundamentally on getting people to behave with good manners towards other people. It's its other implications, where it moves into making certain things unsayable and therefore certain thoughts unthinkable, where it becomes a malign influence.
What are the main threats you see it, as you see it, threatening this country?
Oh, it's no question of threats. I mean, it's finished.
It's not. Do you really think this is your pessimism coming through again?
Finished. I've never seen a country more finished. We are bankrupt, non-sovereign, robbed of our culture and our past. We have no power to save ourselves. The next proper history of this country will be written in Chinese.
Finally, do you have any optimism whatsoever about the future of Britain and what it could become?
No.
Why?
Why should I? I mean, ridiculous. And if I turn out to be wrong, it'll be a pleasant surprise. If I turn out to be right, I'll be prepared for it.
So pretty bleak.
Yeah. in between the crisis and the catastrophe, we may as well have a glass of champagne. But it is not...
I can't do that. I'll be called a champagne socialist, but you feel free.
I don't suppose that's really much of an insult anymore, is it? I thought it was the Tories who weren't allowed to drink champagne.
Maybe not. I don't know. I've had words.
It's George Osborne's rule.
Look, it's been an absolute pleasure. You're a gentleman as ever. Great to see Peter. I told you he'd surprise us. He does have beliefs and ideas you wouldn't quite expect him to have. He is pretty pessimistic, though, as you can see. But it was a pleasure meeting him and chatting to him. I hope you enjoyed it as well. We've got lots of other interviews kicking about. Keep the comments coming and subscribe to the channel. I'll see you next time.